Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guest this week is something of an old friend, so I'm thrilled that we get to record today's show in person in the studio. She first blew us away with her voice on The X Factor when she was just 16 and, despite leaving the competition before the finals, bagged a record deal pretty much overnight with Simon Cowell. And with good reason, because man oh man, can she sing. Even Adele made a rare show on social media to lend her support, tweeting, "She's incredible, I love her." That's my Adele impression. After leaving the show, life turned on its head and she was flying to LA to write with legendary songwriters like Babyface and OneRepublic's Ryan Tedder, returning home with huge hits like Ghost, which debuted at number one in the charts, as did her debut album, Chapter One. She did things like fly to New Zealand for a day to do a show. She appeared on Ellen, who loved her, raved about her, and released collaborations with Jack Jones and Cigala. But in the midst of all of that, she lost any sense of idea and identity as to who she was. She started suffering with severe anxiety, eventually stepping back to heal and repair just as the world locked down. In fact, while she did so, she also fell in love with former Team GB swimmer Jack Burnell, who she met on a dating app and now they're cohabiting. Fancy. She's ready to go again. She's back with a brand new album. It's called Everything I Didn't Say. So let's find out what she's been dying to talk about. It's Ella Henderson. Hello. As I live and breathe. How are you, darling?
I'm very well, thank you. I feel like that was the best intro ever to, like, I feel like I've just had a reminder of my last 7-8 years.
It has been. I mean, as decades go, it was pretty monumental.
Yeah.
You sit here today as a 26-year-old, but you first stepped into the limelight as a 16-year-old.
It's mad, isn't it? When you think about it, really, like 10 years ago, 16 years old. I think I don't realise how young I was
until now.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just bizarre, because I think everyone used to tell me that, even you told me that when we first met.
Yeah.
And I was that age, but I think when you're in it, you're like, what? Like, and you just kind of go through the paces, learn on the go, and then now I'm sat here now and I'm just like, all the experiences, all the life experience, all the ups, all the downs, the roller coaster of life, like, it's just what I've learned and lived through, I think, is just now I just see it as a huge, huge blessing into what I'm about to go and do right now.
And I think for those of us that have known you for a long time, we could always see, for example, I mean, you're an incredible songwriter, Ella, and you don't just sing like, you know, one of the great divas of all time, as endorsed by Adele. Did I mention that? But you also write beautiful songs and you've written for other artists. And we could see that if we could just help you to just have the best life experience, that all of that would grow in your songwriting. Mm. And here we are 10 years on. You've lived, you've hurt, you've loved, you've laughed. You've done all, that whole spectrum of life experience that you've collected over the last 10 years. I now hear in what you're singing and putting back out there. How are you feeling? Because it's been a minute since you know, the last few or four, 3 or 4 years, you've been in a pair of jogging bottoms recording.
Yeah, I have. And do you know what? It's been the most therapeutic process ever. I think there was a period of time where everything kind of, obviously, when Ghost happened, obviously I had some time between X Factor and coming back out with an album and everything. When Ghost happened, that just kind of skyrocketed, and nothing prepared me for that. I think nothing can. All of that happened. And it was amazing.
Huge hit, not just here, but in the States. I mean,
yeah,
all
like literally that song took me like across the globe into places that I never thought I'd visit in my lifetime, let alone it be because of something that I'd written and was like, you know, a passion of mine. So yeah, all of that was just so bizarre. And I think it, 2 or 3 years of that, I was just flying here, there, everywhere, promoting, touring, on stage. And then eventually you get back to London, and I sat like in my flat in London that didn't even have like a proper sofa at the time, because I was never there. And I just realized, like, I don't really know what to write about then for album two, because I've got nothing to write about. Like, there's nothing real I can write about. No one's going to relate to what I've just done. And, you know, yeah, at the age of 19, 20, like, it's not relatable at all. So I think that was the first instance where I knew, like, I need to take a little bit of time now for me and take a little bit of a step back. I mean, I was so grateful for everything that had happened, but I think, you know, things like where all my friends were, they were all at uni. I'd missed like the gap of A-levels at school and that kind of like end of year college time. And it's such like a pinnacle age for you to like grow. That transition of being a teenager into like a young woman is like terrifying anyway, with the hormones.
Yeah.
And wild. And then doing it in the public eye, it was just too much for me. I was like, I really, really need to figure out who I am. Outside, nothing to, not about what record am I, what artist am I, what do I look like, what do I sound like, who am I, what do I enjoy doing outside of music, what's my hobbies, what's my passions.
The answer was you had no time for hobbies.
Yeah.
And for example, while all your friends were learning to drive, you had a driver. I mean, those are the differences.
No, exactly.
Right?
That's just weird. And it's true. I didn't have a driver's license, and I wanted to do driving lessons. And I can remember even being like, I really want to learn how to drive, but we didn't even have the time to schedule it in at one point. And I was like, this is so annoying. Cause when I came home to visit my family, and we live like in the sticks of nowhere up north, you have to get everywhere by a car. So I'd be like in my early 20s, like having to get lifts everywhere. I just felt like a right idiot. It's like, this is like debilitating, like everything that, you know, I can do everything and I've earned some good money, but I can't drive a car. Like, it was weird.
Yeah. So it was time to plug back into being a person again and not just an artist, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's been 10 years since you stepped up from being a performing arts student. Yeah. And you literally blew everyone away. And now with the second album, you're moving into a brand new chapter of your life. And I want to kind of talk through the milestone moments of this decade for you.
Yeah.
What have been the standout, like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened moment? But also, what have been the greatest challenges?
I would say, I think one of the biggest moments I ever believed in myself was definitely that first audition on X Factor. And I know it sounds very cliche to say, but you've got to remember, I come from a very small town in Grimsby in Lincolnshire, and things like that don't happen to girls like me. So for that to have happened, especially when I was singing my own song, I think it just completely threw me and took me back. And I always said, oh,
this
I'm never going to cry.
This is what we must remind people of, right, is that most people would come on and sing a cover.
Yeah.
You went on and performed an original piece.
Yeah. I mean, that was the main thing that drew me towards auditioning for the show that year, was the fact that they introduced that new rule. And it wasn't even to, looking back on it now, when I actually think about what drew me towards it, because I've been asked this question so many times now, and I think I never was that girl or that kid that would sit on the sofa and watch the show and think, as soon as I'm of age, I'm auditioning for it. Like, I didn't have that kind of confidence, but I knew that I wanted to write songs for artists. And I loved, like, my icons are like Carole King, Ella Fitzgerald, Aretha Franklin, like proper empowering women that sit behind a piano, can sing the song, stand at the mic and tell you what it's about. And it's from a real life experience. So I heard that there was a new rule on the show that year, and I wanted to audition because I really wanted to see if there was a producer or an agent anywhere behind the scenes that could kind of just give me a leg up or an intro to someone in the industry and help me or give me feedback.
Because when you are living in Grimsby, you know, and access to any kind of label is, well, how do you even do that?
Yeah.
You know, Gary Barlow sat here on this stage a couple of weeks back talking about but talking about exactly that. And he's like, he used to travel down from Cheshire with his you know, cassettes of his original, like he had a million love songs on this cassette that he'd written at the age of 15. And sit in record company foyers hoping that somebody from A&R would pass and he could at least put it in their hand and sort of beg them to play it, really. Because otherwise, how else, unless you know people, how do you get even...
Yeah, you've got to kind of like try door. And create them opportunities for yourself.
So the X Factor was a brilliant fast track for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I thought it was very astute, actually, of the show to introduce a songwriting element, because you'd started to see some, certainly the moment they did that, James Arthur was in your year, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
And so another great artist, right? Not kind of competition.
It did feel
us.
Like a special year that year. You had like James and myself, and we write, even Rylan from that year, like he is like been a lifelong friend and like my agony aunt throughout my whole career. So, and we've been there for each other through thick and thin. And I think it just did feel like a special year. And also I think nobody quite understands what it's like to be a part of that unless you were one of those contestants. Mm.
And in recent years, you know, the show waned in popularity, but when you guys were on it, and I know, cause I used to host the X Factor, it's intense.
It is,
you know.
We didn't have social media though.
Yeah, you didn't.
We had it, but it was like
low level.
Very low level.
When Twitter.
When I look, getting a tweet like you just mentioned about Adele, like that's, if you got a tweet from somebody, that would like, whereas now it's like, you know, you get tags, comments, stories,
and you can slide
in the DMs of someone, like, and if they don't follow you, like that didn't exist then. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it was kind of like the beginning of like this new age and stuff. But I feel like that was like the last year where it felt a little bit more, I don't know, like you couldn't really see the negative parts.
The trolling.
Yeah, the trolling side of it all.
Although I felt Rylan got some of that because he became sort of probably one of the first iterations of a meme with the crying with Nicole and then the papers, you know, which still had, you know, a lot of clout then. I mean, they still do now, but amplified that. And then, for me, I'd been around the first time around with things like Pop Stars with Darius, and I felt like he was being made a bit of a, it turned into a bit of a joke.
Yeah.
And actually, he really is having the last laugh now. Yeah. So, you know.
I think Rylan's done better off than me and James put together, so I'm buzzing for him. So he's had an incredible riding career and stuff. So,
so really important friendships came out of that decade then.
No, absolutely. And I think coming away from it as well, I think what that show did give me was like this real kind of sense of, I almost treat it like this is like a boot camp of what's to come, because there were parts of it that were really difficult, like being all of a sudden like writing songs in my bedroom or writing songs at school and only my family and friends kind of known about it. So all of a sudden like doing it on TV, cameras, magazine shoots. Like I think I ended up being like the only girl left halfway through that competition. So I was constantly the one that was flung forward to do anything that was, you know, oh, this makeup thing wants to do this with you. And I had to do the whole lot. I had kind of no say in it, but I did enjoy it because I think there had to be a part of me that did, because I am the type of person where if I really hated something, you would know and I wouldn't have done it. Yeah. Like, and my dad's always said that about me. He calls me the dominator. Like there's just this part of me where it's like, no, I'm not doing
it.
It's
not really the cutest family nickname I've ever
heard. No, it's not. That and frog face, because I've got a massive mouth and I grew into my mouth as a kid.
I grew into my mouth.
My mum and dad say it's why I can sing. So I always had this huge mouth.
This
big gob
teeth.
On me. No, I know exactly. And I've had to grow into it.
In talking about those kind of key moments, Adele must have been one of them.
Yeah, for sure. Adele performing on the Ellen Show. I think like one of the most special moments to me was probably when I would land in a new country that I'd never been to before, and there would be like some fans at the airport, which I found like crazy and bizarre, and getting into a cab, putting the radio on and hearing my song played there for the first time, that would always be like the most surreal thing. So I'd just be like, what, how, like I've never heard of this city yet they already know about me. Like it was just very bizarre to me. And something that I just like, I never really got used to and still would never get used to. And just, you never really take them moments for granted because it is pinch me moments. It's like what you always dream of. And it was always happening to me like a lot sooner than I ever anticipated, you know.
Almost before you were ready for it.
Yeah. I mean, my goal, like you said about Gary being with the cassette tapes begging for a record deal, like in my head, I was like, I want to get a record deal like by my mid 20s. So by now, I'm 26 now. I was like, by the time I'm 25, that's the goal. But 10 years earlier than that is when I signed Across the Dotted Line. So it's actually really surreal that, you know, I almost feel like these last 10 years for me have been like the run up to what's to maybe come now.
What I love is the fact that you are with, so you're looked after by one of the best managers in the business, a gentleman called Mark. I've known Mark for many years.
Yeah.
And I've worked with Mark for many years. He and his wife have managed, you know, incredible acts. I met them when they were putting the Sugar Babes on their
yes.
feet. Mark has always had a view that you were a long-term artist. It wasn't yeah. about making the first 3 years really work for you after X Factor. It was always a much longer-term vision because yeah. he knows that the songwriting is there as well as this phenomenal voice. You've always had that support, which I think is yeah. really important. And also when you went to Mark, when things started to get difficult, he was yeah. the first person to say, down tools.
Yeah.
Chill.
No, he was. And also Mark was the first person that I think I ever sat down with and listened to me, to what I actually, you know, what I wanted to achieve, and he believed me. And having belief in this game is like a huge thing as well, because you can believe in yourself so much, but you need the people that are going to jump in the car with you and you're going to drive it and they're going to come along on the ride with you. But
and back you.
Yeah.
When you make 100%. Calls that are unpopular with the label or, you know,
gosh,
I'm not
yeah.
going to wear that. And I'm not going to sing that. And I'm not going to say
that.
He is.
He's like sometimes we are each other's worst enemy, but for the best reasons. And then, but the most of the time. And that's only because like I'm being really stubborn about something and he's trying to like help shape and change my career. But most of the time I just call him, he's like my biggest protector. Like he won't do anything that, you know, he's like my second dad now. Like we've known each other for 10 years.
I used to say to your mum, don't worry, she's got Mark.
No,
because
I know.
Your mum would flap.
Great.
And I was like, honestly.
And Mark is, to this day, I sat in a room with Mark 10 years ago. And before I ever like took him on as my manager, he said, what do you want to achieve? Like, what's your biggest, like, where's the end goal with you? And I was like, well, I don't know where the end goal is, but I know that it involves getting a Grammy one day. Like, that's happening. And it's got to happen.
You said that at 16.
Yeah. And I can remember, like, Mark was like, all right, we're doing it. So me and Mark still have that goal now. Like, yes, it's been 10 years on, but you hear of artists doing 20, 30 years till they get to that moment where you stood up on that stage winning a Grammy. And, that still is my goal and my ambition and my drive. Like, although I've had a lot of success from a young age, like having the number one and the album and a lot of success here in the UK at a young age, like now I'm kind of like, okay, those are stepping stones. And I'm so grateful for like the achievements I've had. And I sit here and say that now because a few years ago, I thought I was a failure. So it's really interesting. Like even when I hear myself saying it, it's taken me a while to get to a place to even say that because I've sat with therapists and all sorts to be proud of it because my mum like is like, you should be proud. Like, but
you should, Ella. And you know what? For all the extraordinary experiences, like your extraordinary success, it's still very lonely because it's not something you can sit down with your mates and discuss because they haven't experienced
yeah.
that. So it makes total sense to then sometimes for that to just come on top and for you to
for
break.
Sure.
And, you know, there's a beautiful thing in Japanese culture where, you know, like if a vase breaks, for example, they repair it with gold leaf so you can see where the cracks are. And I think for a songwriter, that's probably the greatest analogy is that actually you, for having fallen on the floor and gone, I can't cope at the moment, that will come back in your music. And Carole King and Ella Fitzgerald, pain underpinned so much of what they wrote
yeah.
about. And you hadn't had any as a 16-year-old.
No, I hadn't. I think like life hadn't hit me
not
yet.
That I'm saying it's great that you had a really difficult time with your mental health, but you know what I'm saying.
No, for sure.
Like, and Adele's not known for her upbeat cheery chit-chat, is she?
No.
In her songs, you know?
No, and I think I needed that. I think I needed to just, obviously it was like my ultimate decision to take a step back, but I did have the support network around me to do that as well. And it's the first time as well where I think I could just take a bit of time to be like, okay, well, aside from music, is this even what I want to carry on doing? Because I can stop if I want to. I can go on now if I want to like be just a songwriter. Is that what would make me the happiest? And I had to dig deep to figure what those things were. There are songs sometimes that I write for other artists in the last like 2 years and I get this like really excited feeling, like when I hear that song being on the radio, and it's because, and I think it's more of a thing of that you're, you know, they think that your song's good enough for them, not just like, it's not something that I think is just good for me. Like that to me is like, it feels better than me doing a song that I've written for myself sometimes.
Who have you written for?
I've written for Paloma Faith, Kygo, a lot of DJ acts, KSI and Nathan Dore. A lot of dance songs I've written, and a lot of songs that even end up being played when I'm like in a shop or in the radio, and I'm like, I recognize it and I realize it's my song and I don't realize they're coming out and stuff. But I've done a lot of like, that was kind of stuff as well that I was doing when I knew I wanted to take a step back, but I still wanted to, like, I couldn't not stop music and not write. Mm. So it's more a case of like being the voice on things or just doing things because that's what makes me happy.
Well, you put yourself into places where you felt safe, which is good because you knew that you were burning out.
Mm-hmm.
And the burnout did come. The song that propelled and changed everything for you was Ghost. And I remember when you were going off to write with Ryan Tedder, because there was this, and it was really last minute. I mean, this guy cleared his schedule for you. So Ryan Tedder is the lead singer of One Republic, but more importantly, he's, like, I mean, he is seriously one of the world's greatest songwriters. So to get time with him, you're talking about months, maybe even a year in advance of trying to book time in with him if he's interested in working with you. He cleared his deck for you.
It was mad.
And
I
oh my God.
I know. And I was 17 when I met him, because I turned 18 when I was in. He invited me to finish the song Ghost. We started it in London together,
mm-hmm.
and we wrote the chorus really quickly. And that's all we had at first. And
it was very churchy, the chorus.
Yeah, it was. It was really gospel. He was like, I've got this idea of like gospel stuff and all of this. And I was like, and Ghost itself, the whole metaphor of it came from, I was at a point where I think was nearly ready to like round up the album. And I was like, I just feel like I've got this extra bit to give. But, and everyone says about, you know, when it's your first single, but I haven't had that feeling yet. And it's, I can't eat, I can't sleep. I feel like, and then he was like, you feel haunted by it. And then it led to this whole thing. And that's where Ghost stemmed from.
Wow.
And then he flew me out to Denver to go finish at his house. And I can remember it was on my 18th birthday. I was finishing the vocals for Ghosts and I was doing all the ad-libs part to the track. And I can remember like listening to it at the end of the day and going back to the hotel and flying home thinking like, whatever happens now, I know I've given like my sweat, blood and tears to this album. And I couldn't think of any other song that would represent me any more than this record. So I knew I was mentally in that place, but to have it come out and it, to do what it did was like, it took me back like loads. Like I never, ever thought that. Because you can have people that, you know, like blow wind up your ass and all that, but it's like, I don't believe in all of that. Like I'm very realistic about things. I dream and I set goals and I'm passionate and I'm determined, I'm driven, but like I am a realist at the same time. So for that to happen was just very unreal to me. But
major. I mean,
yeah, it was major.
It's the song that changed everything. But you got to a point, I know, where I think, were you in LA when you just unraveled?
Yeah, I think so. After the whole campaign with my first album, I then decided to, we mutually parted ways, myself and Psycho. And I was with them for like
Psycho
6, 7 years.
Psycho is Simon Cowell's record label.
Yes, yeah, with the record label. And I was with them for 6, 7 years, which, you know, looking back on it now, I think I tortured myself too much thinking like, oh my God, like if I come out of this deal and we part ways, like I'm never going to sign again or this is never going to happen again. And I look at it now and I think of like my brothers, I'm the youngest of four, and I look at my brothers and sisters. And when I eventually went home up north and I sat down and had a cup of tea with my mum, she was like, do you know how many times your brothers and sisters have sat in, on the sofa opposite me and said, I'm changing jobs or I'm going to change career and stuff. She's like, you've decided to literally just part ways with a company in your, you know, in your industry after 6, 7 years. She was like, you've stood ground in, the, like you've done better than your brothers and sisters in a sense of like actually sticking to something in that thing. So I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I see that. Because I felt guilty at first that I was like, is this the right decision? Am I doing the right thing? And it just felt right. I was ready for change. And I feel like everything that I kind of was there for in the beginning sense, like they understood me and the people that were there from the beginning weren't there anymore. So it's just, it was a different place. And I'd changed
really
as well.
That's a really important thing, right? The people that you start working with that get you, if they're no longer there and new people come in,
you can't buy passion.
The dynamic shifts, right?
Yeah.
And then they're going to want to bring their own people in. That's just life. But of course, the first time is always the hardest when you rip that plaster, that band-aid off and go,
I've never done anything
working.
Like that.
I'm moving on. Yeah.
That contract, when I signed my first record deal, that was technically me signing up for my first job in effect, because never even done a paper round. Like, and it sounds mad to say, and I think it sounds sometimes really stupid, but I hadn't. This was my first job. So for me, it was like a really big life-changing decision to make. So we decided to make that decision together, and I knew it was going to, that we decided that in the December, and it was going to all happen in the new year. So in the new year, I'd planned to go away to Austria. And I went to this like health farm place, switched my phone off. I actually went with my manager's wife, Deb. I took her with me. We went for 2 weeks and switched off. And I just needed the time as well to just kind of like figure out, okay, what do I want to do? Do I want to just write? Do I want to be a singer still? And I realized there and then that like performing, writing a song's one thing, and the whole studio run of it, that's like, you know, I'm in my element there. But singing a when you have a taste of singing a song that you've written and a crowd singing it back to you, nothing tops that adrenaline. No chocolate bar, no ice cream, no sex, no glass of wine.
Yeah.
Nothing ever will top that feeling for me anymore. Like,
it's the ultimate high for you.
It is. So I can't. And when you've had a taste of it, like, you want to go again. So I knew that's what I ultimately wanted, but I knew I needed to take the right steps to get back there. And I didn't want to just quickly fall into a deal. I didn't even think I'd get another record deal. I was like, maybe I'm going to do this independently this time. Maybe this is going to be a complete different
experience.
But also,
in those 6 years that you've been with Psycho, the role of the label has changed, had changed a lot. It's changed even more since then. And people are self-publishing and they are doing it themselves. So there's ultimately, there's not one tried and tested way of working. Yeah. There's lots of different avenues that you as an artist can explore now.
There were. And then obviously I sat down with my team and Mark and everything. And at this time as well, I think it wasn't until I actually stopped and had no pressure was, I think, when it, maybe is when I had the first sense of like something bubbling away, which I now know was anxiety. And I think it's maybe something that I carried with me from a young age, but it's something I bottled up and maybe hid because we didn't really talk about it. And I also didn't want to sound like a crazy person. I also didn't want to sound like I couldn't cope just because I'm young. Don't think I can't cope with it. And because I'm a woman, I can't cope. Like, I just used to think like maybe I'll start getting like shifted to the back of the list and stuff if I start to say how I actually felt. So it was actually the Rudimental Boys that I met in a studio in London. They were in a studio next door to me, and they're incredible writers and DJs, and you'll know a lot of their music, and I'm sure people will. But they heard some of my music that day in the studio, and they had no idea that I was even from, they just knew me from Ghost. They'd never seen me on X Factor. So I told them my whole story, and that was it. I can remember we spent the day in the studio just watching all my auditions back, and we was laughing and chatting about it all. And at the time, they'd set up their own record label underneath Atlantic Records, and they had Anne-Marie signed at the time. And that's when it all kind of started to fall into place, this, and people started to become interested under the same roof of Atlantic, and that it all came under the same family tree. And that for me, just, I naturally gravitated towards this place where all of a sudden I felt like, you know, my A&R Kev now is a guy where I feel like he just gets me, understands me musically. And
you found your people.
I did. I found my people again. And even in the process of that, like, I was terrified to get back up on stage again. It took me to, I went on tour with Rudimental, and I literally performed as one of their singers for like a couple of months. And it's the first time I've ever got up on stage in like, I think it was like 2 years. And I was terrified. And I can remember Leon in the band introduced me to come out and sing a song with them. And like the whole crowd were like, I could see them all like pointing, being like, is that Ella? Like, and like people were tapping on to recognize me, or some people didn't have a clue who I was. And I then realized, like, oh, like, there's no judging here. Like, I can literally just be whatever I want to be. And this is a chance for me to just start again, almost.
Reset.
Yeah, it was a reset button. And so I'm so grateful for them boys, because they really like helped me just see this freeing like openness to the side of the industry that I think I'd never felt before, where it was, I can just be anything I want to be. And I'm not saying anybody ever sat me down and said, you've got to be this. I think it's just maybe all lights, camera, action was on me from a young age, that I felt like I couldn't make a mistake or choose to maybe try something else because I didn't want to do it with the pressure that was on me.
Yeah.
So that all started to happen. I signed the deal into my new album, and yeah, it was just a very random trip to LA that I took over like a Christmas period. There was a lot going on in my personal life as well with my family that was in the like the back seats at the time. And I had my first panic attack in IKEA of all places, which I think could probably cause a panic attack anyway. But in LA,
I was gonna say, IKEA in the one-way system is enough to give me anxiety.
I know. And I'd never had one before. And I honestly, Kate, like, I thought, like, this is it. I'm going in IKEA. And
you thought you were dying.
Oh. Like, I was like, when I've heard about symptoms of a heart attack and stuff, or people speak about it and you freeze up or and your heart racing, and like I was literally on the floor and IKEA had to organise an ambulance, and I ended up somewhere in a hospital over there and sat. I woke up, all I remember is waking up with a doctor in America telling me, do I suffer with anxiety? Am I on any medication? I was like, what? Like, no, like this, that's not me. Like I'm bubbly, I'm this person and I'm fine. Like I'm here in LA, life's good. I've just signed my new deal. And like, you know, it was like something I just couldn't believe. And I didn't believe it for ages. I think it took me 8 to 9 months until I eventually sat down with my management and made the decision to take a step back from everything.
You fought it for a while.
Yeah. I did.
Because I think
I tried to just carry on and let it be a thing that was happening in the background, but it would affect me so much.
Because you perceive it as a potential weakness. And I think actually what we do is sometimes the mind can be much stronger than the body. So the mind is going, well, you're fine. You've got this. You are a bubbly person. You've just signed your record deal. You are fine. And your body is going, no, I'm broken and I'm hurting. And that's how it how it shows itself. And that's what happened to you in IKEA, of all places. And it happened again and again and again. And you've had to really learn how to reset everything in your mind and your body in order to come back to where you are now. It's a hell of a journey, Ella. You've done so well to be sat here today. But how did you repair your broken vase of a mind and body?
I wouldn't even say I'm still repaired. I'm still on that journey now. Like I mean, when you talk about from where I was to where I'm now, I've come such a long way, but it took a lot of sitting down and being really honest with myself.
Hard.
Which is really hard. Being honest with my family, with my team. And I think realizing that I'm not letting anyone down, like I think for ages I felt quite guilty, like, oh my God, but like everyone's wants to, like, at the end of the day, yes, I'm Ella, but there is Gabriella behind it all. That's my birth name. And I can remember sitting down with Mark for the first time, was like, how can Ella even like run a business when Gabriella like is literally screaming in the background for like, can we just stop and hit pause for a minute? And I wanted to hit pause initially just before the first lockdown. And I sat in a room with management and I said, look, like, we're going to have to tell everybody, like, I can't keep going. I need to just like take a few months out and just like sort this out. I need to go to like therapy sessions. I'll do whatever it takes to just work on me. Like, I'll come off social media. I just want to find me again. And I went home back to my parents, and 2 weeks later, Boris announced a national lockdown. Joke aside, I know COVID and the whole pandemic, and for so many people, it's been such a struggle in so many ways for like all different reasons. But for me personally, like, it couldn't, like, for everyone to hit pause and realize how important that is in life, it couldn't have come at a better time in my life. The last time I spent 8 weeks with my mum and dad, I was 14 years old. And I'm not saying I went back to being a 14-year-old, but I went back to everything that grounded me again. Like, and it was the simple things. Like, I would get up, I'd have porridge with my mum, I'd have a cup of tea with her, I'd sit outside the back door, we'd take the dogs for a walk, even if it's just round the garden. And I'd sit and talk to my mum, and I just felt like closer to everything that felt like home to me again. And I can't quite put my finger on what it was. You know, there was a lot of, I did take up meditation, yoga, and I'm not saying that I'm sitting in a bedroom going, oh, like, I actually, breathing techniques, like, I find...
Which really help with anxiety. Oh,
like, incredible. Like, breathing's changed my life.
It really does. It calms and controls the heart and the palpitations in a way that nothing else can, actually.
No, it's like, bizarre.
You can do it with meditation.
Because I didn't believe... I think the thing that really, really, like, got me was... I felt like I wasn't in control of the panic attacks ever. Mm. And, you know, when I sat down with someone for the first time and they really taught me how to breathe through it and stuff, they said, the next time it comes on, try it, even to the point where you think it's still not working. And it took me to push through that barrier of like 3 minutes of breathing until eventually my heart rate would come back down. I'd be like, oh, okay, like, it does work. But you don't believe it at first that it's going to.
But once you've managed to find a way to get on top of it, it no longer owns you. You own it. And that's a massive shift in the relationship you have with anxiety then, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you can start to boss it rather than it boss you.
And lifestyle. I think I've never really turned to, you know, things like like, look, I like a glass of wine here or there, and but I've never really turned to drink or drugs for that kind of thing. But I didn't used to sleep. My sleep was horrendous, and that is like one of the key things. Mm. If you look at anxiety, if I'm tired, hungry and tired, you're gonna the chances are I'll probably have a bit of a wobble that day. So like I need, and I've just learned so much more of what balance is, and like, you know, my boundaries. I never had boundaries. I used to be this yes person, and I just used to go yes, yes, yes to everything, and I used to do everything and do it to try and do it to my full, which actually when I look back probably wasn't even my full, like it was probably like 70%, because I couldn't give you my full potential.
Because it wasn't there.
No. Yeah. So taking this time was really important for me. And naturally what happened was as well, I think that period as well, I was going to quit music like just before lockdown. I was ready to literally...
That would have been such a
shame. I say this and it like, it sounds so bad, but I was at the mindset of, if every day I wake up is going to feel like this heaviness... Yeah. Then like why I'm not doing this job that's in that, like it's just going to add to. So music for a while didn't feel like it always did, until I think it was probably 3 months down the line of that lockdown, where I remember the moment I went through to my mum and dad's living room, and there's the upright old piano, which is so out of tune, but it's the piano I grew up on as a kid. And I was in my pajamas one morning, I think I'd gone in and just started playing, and slowly I could hear my mum and dad's feet in the hallway. They're listening at the door, and then eventually they came in and they both started crying, and then I started crying because it was a big moment. We was just sat there like, you know, you've gone from wanting to quit, like we've gone through all this, and we've gone through this whole journey as well as a family in the background. And I just think for me to have done that for myself, because my mum and dad never wanted to push me back onto the piano, because I think they always knew that was going to be the place I was going to probably find hope again. But it came from me, and I think that's what was like this big vulnerable moment in that living room. And that was literally the starting point of finishing the album that's now. And you can even hear that on the album. There's like this whole... I don't know whether I was listening to too much Stevie Nicks, Fleetwood Mac, and too
many acoustic. No such thing as too much Stevie Nicks.
Yeah, you really hear this like Nashville songwriter acoustic led side of the album, which was all born out of the lockdown. It was literally like me.
But you
have
that country angst in you.
I do. I love country music.
You do. And you dig really deep. And it sounds like that moment at the piano was a full stop on a chapter that was very painful, but also that opened a sentence on a new beginning.
Yeah, no, it really did. And I can remember sitting down being like, I wanted to immediately get on the phone with Mark and be like, let's get back on with this. Like, let's pick up from where we left off. And I can remember the initial conversation, and my dad even drove me back to London, and I went and sat down at Mark's again, and we sat in a living room and we said, let's do this. Like, it's gonna be baby steps, get me back into the swing of things and everything. And I think because everybody had this understanding as well of like how real, you know, my mental health battles and struggles have been. And I think now, because we're talking about it so much more, it's easier for people to understand.
I think that helps as well, because before you would have felt that you were starting a conversation, not contributing to one that was already ongoing.
And I do think if you haven't, you're bloody lucky, but I do think everyone's probably gone through it or is going through it, and you might not even know it yet. You might not want to call it that or label it that, and we don't have to label it anything. It is
just a feeling sometimes, and those feelings grow and swell. My son has, you know, lessons at school about this. They are... The generations that are coming up behind us are so much better educated because of us, because we started difficult conversations. You've done amazingly. I mean, listen, I'm not your mum, but I'm so proud of you. I feel like your mum.
Oh, no, thank you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping
and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
My next question for you is kind of picks up on something you've just said, actually. It's about saying yes and actually the importance of learning to say no. Mm-hmm. The yeses that you got on The X Factor changed your life.
Yeah.
You were a yes person from then on in terms of wanting to take every opportunity and not appearing to be anything other than open to it, which kind of bit you on the ankles in the end to some degree because you burn out, you overdo it, you overextend yourself. So what I want to know is not about the big yeses, but what have been the most important no's that you've learned to say?
Do you know what? I have to say that it's taken a long time for me to start saying no to things. And I'm talking about not even like work related things, like in my personal life or whether it be in a love relationship, you know, like setting boundaries that just, you know, I now know where I stand and what I will accept and what I won't. But I think I used to sometimes let a guy walk all over me. And now learning the power of no and learning that boundaries are there for a reason and you don't have to feel guilty for them. They're actually just there to set a precedent of this is my morals, this is where I align. If you align with me, great. If you don't, then you can piss off. Yeah. And that's how I see it now. And it is a really powerful tool. I've only just started like abiding by it in the last couple of years since I've started like this self journey, I suppose. But it is really empowering because as much as I was saying yes to things, I wasn't doing myself any favors. I was probably just like doing stuff half-heartedly. And I'm not saying, look, I don't say no to everything like because I can't be bothered. Like you've got to push through. You're going to be tired. You're going to be a bit stressed out at times and stuff. But
and there was, listen,
it's saying no to the right things. If something just really doesn't feel right, if something feels like it's like almost like rotten in your stomach and you're like, I don't like this feeling, like say it, express it. That's fine. Everyone
just
raise
it. Yeah. Right. You don't even have to go no. It's just like, I'm not sure this feels quite right. I mean, listen, working in the industry that you do with the pressures that you have, you are going to feel tired. You are going to have to crack on and push through sometimes. Those things still stand. But when it goes to that next level of like, this isn't right.
Yeah.
Have you now found the confidence to speak up?
Yeah, no, I do. And I have. Like, there's definitely been moments even when I've gone to events or had like little wobbles in the car to a red carpet. And I'm thinking, but, you know, we just pull the car around. And until I'm ready, that's when I'll go. Like, it's not like, you've got to be there now. It's like, there's always going to be things that'll happen where I didn't plan for them to happen. And I've got to accept that. And I used to try and fight my anxiety and fight all of this. And now I don't, I just surrender to it. And I'm like, okay, ride the wave of it. Cause I don't own like the feeling of anxiety. It comes in waves. And when it does come on, I don't really have control of it, but I do have control of how I can allow it to affect me.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. So now I just try and be as calm as I can about it. And instead of rising to the stress and getting everything to bottle up and I feel like everything's here and I'm choking, like,
tighten your throat.
Yeah, I just like that whole feeling. I try and like do the complete opposite. Also, the biggest thing ever is, and my fella is the best for this, is bringing me back to the present tense. I'm such a worrier about what's lying ahead, not just like next Tuesday.
That's anxiety.
I think about something of next year. Like, and he's like, why are you even thinking about that? Your diary's got like 8 things to get through today. Just get through today. And I'm like, oh, okay. It's good to just be reminded of that. Or even just get through the now, this present. And like having someone like that by my side has been really amazing as well.
So he was an important yes as opposed to an important no.
He was an important yes.
Did you swipe on him or did he swipe on you?
Do you know what? I think we both did it around the same time because it's one of those apps where you just see if you connected or not. So I don't know who actually was the first one. So basically what happened was I'm single in lockdown and it takes, you know, I'm with my mum and dad for 8-9 weeks and it's getting quite like, you know, I'm not been able to have a drink with the girls or go out and meet anyone. And I'd come out of a relationship. So like, I just wanted to like, feel like have a sense of confidence back and, you know, that didn't exist. So it's my mum and dad that pushed me to go on a date. And I was like, go on, like get chatting and stuff. Like, I was like, you deserve it. And I was like, oh, I don't know. My confidence is on the floor in that realm. And then when I did, what I did really like about Jack was he was adamant about coming straight off the app and let's FaceTime and have a glass of wine on FaceTime. And we did, and we was on the phone from like 9 p.m. till like 3 a.m. And that happened like night after night. And I don't think if there wasn't a lockdown, we probably would never have... I don't think we'd be together because...
Do you not?
No, because he's an athlete and he was training for the Olympics. And with what I do, I just know that our diaries just never would have aligned. Yeah. Like, we've probably been on like 3 coffee dates or something crazy like that.
What was it like when you actually met in real life for the first time after all these intense hours of FaceTiming and talking?
Yeah. Do you know what? It was really strange, but I was nervous and excited because I felt like I really knew someone, but I hadn't physically been in a room with them. Mm. But it was weird. I realized that I'd fallen in love with somebody's mind. And that was like really amazing.
Important.
Yeah, it's so important. You know, if I actually be realistic
the fact
now,
that he's got an Olympic swimmer's body probably is also quite helpful.
It always helps. And we did say even before we physically met, we was like, do you know what? Even if this just turns out to be a friendship, that like I think we're just going to be really good friends out of it, even if that was so. But it didn't. It built from a friendship into more and more. And it took us a long time to get there to realize like, wow, like this is like something we've both never felt before. And finding that in a lockdown, I don't know how I did. Finding it from where I'd come from, like being where I was. And also, you know, I was very wary about even allowing somebody into my circle at this time of my life because I knew how important energy is right now in my life. Because 90% of the time, it's all about taking care of myself right now. So to add another person into it sometimes can be a bit difficult. But meeting somebody that just gets it, you know, he's from the age of 10, dedicated his life to like sports and swimming. And
there's a lot of parallels there. He understood it.
And we come from the same hometown. Like,
do you?
Yeah, so he was born in Scunthorpe. I was born in Grimsby. Both his family all in Lincoln. I'm Lincolnshire. So literally when we go home to see the parents, we drive past his mum and dad's door to get to my parents. So like it was 45 minutes up further. So it's mad, like just so many things morally align. And I think one thing that I'd never probably taken on before, and this is more in like relationships I've been in, is I've never morally aligned with anyone I've been with before. I think I've always just probably been attracted to the physical and thought I'll let that thing grow from there and you'll fall in love with them after. But this was just really different. It was more like, I don't know, I already feel like I can imagine us being like two old people sat on a bench sharing like a sandwich or something and just talking about life, because that's us anyway now. Like, and that's what we did during lockdown. We spoke just eight, like literally we could be on the phone for like eight, like I think one of our longest conversations was like nearly 8 hours.
Oh my god, that's a full working day.
No, I know, we was literally like, it was till the next morning, and I can remember us being like, what are we doing? But like it wasn't anything, and I tell you now, it was just like the most, if I wish I could have recorded it maybe, because god knows what we were talking about, all sorts. But yeah, I felt like I knew everything about him and he knew everything about me before you physically met. So,
and do you know what? It sounds like you came into each other's lives, for you certainly, at a really good time. You were just, you know, that full stop had been put in place. You're back on the piano. You're thinking about coming back to work, to you as an artist.
Yeah.
And then he swims along.
I know, literally. And all at that time as well.
Is it a bit hard going on holiday though when he gets in the pool? You're like, all right, sure.
We haven't been on holiday yet because of lockdown and COVID, but I'm literally like, well, I need to get
when you go on holiday,
back.
Let him do the pool at the Olympics, right? And you can nail it on the karaoke.
No, exactly. I'll be on the drunken karaoke nights winning all the little prizes.
So for all the no's, actually, that was a really significant yes, wasn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I think some of the no's I've struggled with is when I'm thinking I'm making the right decision for myself and I'm not, and people are like, no. But I think you've got to go through them and learn and go through your own mistakes. Otherwise, you're never going to learn through life. Like any decision I've made that...
A mistake is a lesson.
Yeah, absolutely. The first time in my life where I feel like work, family, love life, that all the plates are back up spinning and nothing's wobbling and I'm not running around like the clown trying to catch one. Like it feels like... Everything just feels like a bit of a calm, which I get worried to say because then I'm like, there's a storm brewing or something like that. But I don't know. Everything just feels good. And also everyone's really protective over me in my life, especially now and what we've gone through and what we've worked hard to get back. So anyone coming into my circle gets like fully, we get fully vetted now. But including me, I'm even like that. I'm like so wary and so, which I think it's a good thing. And I think it's something that happens when you've gone through stuff.
Because you know that there's a fragility to you.
Yeah.
And that's not a weakness. It's just, it's just what it is.
No.
And while you're fragile and rebuilding, you need to protect that so you can carry on growing. Yeah. It's really important.
I think it's mad because I speak about, like, my vulnerability is, like, comes out in my music. I use that as my therapy. Like, so when I started playing the piano again and all these lyrics are coming out of me, my songs and stuff, and then now I'm actually bringing the album out, which says everything of all of that. It's really weird because if you'd have said to me like 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago even, could you ever see yourself doing this? Could you bring another album out? I'd have said no.
Really?
Yeah. So like I do know how I've worked bloody hard in the sense of like in myself.
You've worked on yourself.
On myself. To get to where I am now and to sit in this seat in front of you to even chat like this. Mm-hmm. Like it's taken a long time.
You've grown up so much, Ella. You really have. I'm so proud of you.
It has taken time. But to think that now, like, that the music, it's really weird because I listen to the album now and it does take you on a journey of the last 8 years of my life. Because I've kept songs on there that I even wrote when I'd just left Psycho. Songs that I didn't want to get rid of. Songs that I knew were, like, my babies. Like, that's when I left Psycho, one of the main things was, like, as long as I can have the rights to my music, that's all I'm bothered about. I'll walk away in any way but with my music. And I'm excited for the fans to hear that as well because I feel like they'd probably deserve to hear what's been going on. And there's certain ones that have grown up with me.
It goes back to what you said. You flew home as an 18-year-old, sat in your flat and realised, I can't drive, I haven't got a telly, I don't know how to function as an 18-year-old. And what the hell
I didn't know how rent worked either. Like, just everything.
You had nothing to write about. Now, 8 years on, life experience is what you've acquired. My third and final question to you. It's about the name of the album, Everything I Didn't Say. So I want to know, very simply, when do you wish you'd spoken up? What do you wish you'd said?
It's a hard question, Kate, because I've always been a gobby git.
You have and you haven't, though.
I have. Yeah, like, you know the real me, so you've known me. This is the thing. I've always been like this. This has always been me. But I think it's having the confidence to actually realize that being that is okay, and like I can be comfortably sit here and be me. I think when I was younger, I used to be terrified to do that.
Yeah, well, so, you're looking left and right to see what everyone else is doing, right?
Yeah, so probably speaking up in a way where I think maybe I just felt like, I don't know, like, you know, I used to do media training and feel like I used to be scared of putting a foot wrong and feeling like I was going to say something wrong, or, you know, is there the perfect answer for everything? And realizing now that there just isn't, that I feel more comfortable now. The more honest I am, the more blunt I am, the more me I am, the more comfortable I feel. The more I feel like I'm not lying to myself, I'm not lying to my fans, I'm not lying to my family, my friends, my management, like, and I'm not hiding anything. Like, even opening up about my anxiety and my mental health, the fact that that's not a hidden agenda anymore, it's made me feel so much stronger and comfortable.
It's freeing, isn't it?
It is really freeing.
And also, I think, you know,
so probably speaking up about that,
you've spoken about things that I know you were really uncomfortable with, like you started to challenge people that made you feel bad about yourself. Photographers that took pictures of you in your bikini on holiday, and you would beat yourself up over that. You hated that. You know, you felt burnt with embarrassment. And then you said something really, really clever. You said, instead of feeling shame for yourself, you realized, why aren't we shaming the person who hopped on a boat and photographed me, a young girl with a long lens in a bikini? And that's exactly the right rate. That's exactly the right lens to put on that situation.
Yeah.
So you've learned to put your anger in the right place. Don't feel shame for yourself. You're on holiday having a lovely time. You know, everybody has a beach body, Ella. As long as you've got a body that can get you onto the beach, you therefore are the owner of a beach body. And anyone that makes you feel different doesn't deserve to have a space in your life.
No,
so
absolutely.
I loved reading that because I thought that was a real turning point for you in terms of putting the blame where it belongs and not at your feet.
Yeah. No, that's very true. And I probably have done that again without realising as well. And it even took me a long time to get through that and over that. And I think, because I'd never had bad press or like these moments where
it,
like, I had them wobbles.
You just didn't want to be seen like that. And Ella, I don't know many women. There's loads of women on Instagram that pose in their bikinis or on TikTok. And that's a choice, right? And great, that's their choice.
Choice, yeah.
If they are hitting the word post and they're publishing that for themselves, more power to you. But put it this way, right? If you weren't a celebrity and that guy wasn't a photographer or woman wasn't a photographer, if that was just a Joe Schmo taking pictures of you in effectively your underwear, mm-hmm. you would have every reason to call the police and they would arrest him because that is wrong. In society deems that as wrong, except...
I also hate the mindset of, and you do come across people that say like, yeah, but you signed up for it. I'm like, well, where's the contract where I signed up for that? Because actually, if you know me and you go back to my teenage years, I actually like my dreams was to be a song, like again, like a Carol King. I want to write music and that. I didn't sign up to be a model and I didn't sign up to do that. And I didn't sign up to prance around on a beach in a bikini, like you just said. So that phrase does annoy me. And that's probably like one thing where...
Because it's not fair.
I wish I'd have probably spoken up a bit more at the time. But again, at the time, I was afraid of speaking up about it more so then because I feel like it would have caused more attention around it. So now I feel like having thicker skin and coming out of it and learning from it, evolving from it, actually it shaping me a bit more as a person as well, like realizing, you know, it actually helped a lot with that in itself. As much as I don't want to thank the photographer, my body confidence in myself has come on so far since that happened because I had to dig deep in this part of me where it wasn't just about this, because it never been about this with me anyway, because I'm here for my voice and here for what I'm going to say and what I'm playing and stuff. But like, I don't know, it's the first time where I'd ever like looked at myself in that way. And when you start doing that, it's quite a dangerous territory to go. And I never wanted to like fall into the trap of going down that route or anything where you start to feel like you can't be who you want to be. And that's what I'd want to say to anyone, especially any like girl that's dreaming of being a pop star or anything. Like, there is no such thing as a pop star anymore. It's like you can be anything you want to be now. And boys. It's not, there's no like mold that you've got to fit in. Just be you and like embrace it and be you 110. And I feel like that's what people want to see and they buy into because you're just one of them. And I think that's the biggest thing I've realized now is like most of my followers and fans, when I meet them, like they're like my friends, like I am one of them. There's no separation other than the fact that I've just had a lucky slot and chance in being given the opportunity of what I've been given. There's probably loads of us singers out there that could go and do, you know, that can sing amazingly and haven't been given that opportunity. It's just like, I've got this, so I'm going to use it as the platform that I've got, use it wisely. I think that was also something that maybe brought me back as well when I was struggling with my mental health. I was like, even if I never touch music again, I'd want to set something up for people that struggle with what I've just gone through and what I'm going through, because it's just, I don't know, it's such a powerful thing. And when you start to learn the tools that help you through life to get you on the right track again, you almost feel like you're unstoppable.
Yeah.
And it is an amazing feeling.
And you want
it is. And I'm not like that all the time. I have days where literally if you saw me, you'd be like, bloody hell. And I think the world's ended in all sorts. But
when you find a way through it, when you find solutions, it's like a cure. You know, you want to share it.
Yeah.
Because you never want to see somebody have those experiences and feel that pain.
Yeah.
Because a panic attack is pain. Mm-hmm. It is pain that is really hard to describe unless you've had one yourself.
I also think as well, panic attacks and anxiety is also, for me now, I see it as a trigger for something needs to change. It's not always, something's wrong. I actually think sometimes...
It's
a red flag and I'm not listening. And when it sometimes happens now, if I actually take a step back and I'll realise it's because you said yes to that, Ella, and really you wanted to say no. And it's things like that where, again, being more empowered with yourself, but you live and you learn.
Well, you have lived, and boy, oh boy, have you learned. And the new record is a testament to that. It's out now. It's available wherever you get your music and your downloads. Ella, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I've enjoyed this.
You have grown into the most incredible young lady. You really have. And I hope that in no way sounds condescending, because it's
not meant. No, not at all.
But I met you as a 17-year-old. I'm talking to you as a 26-year-old woman today.
Crazy.
Lovely to see you.
And you.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. And if you've enjoyed that and you want to hear more conversations with incredible female artists, then look no further. We have a back catalogue absolutely heaving with them. From Skin, from Skunk and Nancy, to Charlene Spiteri, Imelda May, All Saints, Bananarama, Danny Minogue, Lisa Stansfield, Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and Ray. They're all in there. So go on, lend your ears for another hour and dive deep. As always, White Wine Question Time is produced by me, Kate Thornton, with Ben Robbins for Yahoo UK. Editing is by Eleanor Humphreys, and our beats
are from Andy Bell. You can also find his music with Oasis, Ride, and his brand new solo album, Flicker, wherever you get your music. I'll be back next Friday with more great guests. Until then, take care out there.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.